For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The Secret Service White House detail failed to perform their primary function on November 22, 1963, protecting the president. But once you get past that basic failure, there are a lot of secondary questions that come into play. As we attempt to reconstruct how these important Secret Service decisions were made, ones that independently might have saved President Kennedy's life, it's important to continually ask this question. Is this how it was done in other cities in 1963? Or is there something unique about November 22nd in Dallas? In this episode, we revisit the presidential motorcade in Dallas. But this time, we zoom in to the motorcade planning and route itself, as opposed to what was seen by Secret Service in the motorcade, as we previously discussed in episode 11. Why did the motorcade travel the route it did? Who planned the details of the route? And were there any last-minute changes to the motorcade lineup?
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
I don't know what this is all about.
Dallas police this morning resumed custody. The man they have formally charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
I'm just a patsy.
Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? Commission answers, he acted alone.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton.
The story of the decisions behind President Kennedy's motorcade route on November 22nd begins with the planning of the location for the president's luncheon speech that day. There were ultimately two potential candidates, the Dallas Trade Mart and the Women's Building at the fairgrounds. The Trade Mart meant going through Dealey Plaza, whereas the Women's Building would have required a different route that did not go through Dealey Plaza. As the House Select Committee on Assassination said, quote, "The extraordinarily intense conflict about the choice of a speech site seems to indicate at the very least that the possibility of influencing the speech site selection requires close scrutiny." It's also notable that there were no similar controversies about any other event locations in the other four stops on the Texas trip. It only happened in Dallas. Here's the backstory. On October 30th, President Kennedy's political advance man, Jerry Bruno, went to Dallas to evaluate the first choice for the luncheon venue, the Statler Hilton Hotel Ballroom. A quick sidebar is necessary here. According to Statler Hilton employee Laura Layfield, a man who she said looked like Lee Harvey Oswald but had a deeper voice applied for a job at the Statler Hilton Hotel on October 31st. Layfield told the FBI that around lunchtime that day, this man came in and said his name was Oswald. She remembered him because he wrote that he spoke Russian on the application. When Layfield asked this man where he learned to speak Russian, he said it was none of her business. He also mentioned that he had a Russian wife. Oswald worked at the schoolbook depository building at this time, which was about 14 blocks away from the Statler Hilton. So it's theoretically possible that Oswald himself walked there on his lunch break. If not, we have one more Oswald impersonation to add to the list. Either way, what are the chances that Oswald would just happen to apply for a job at the first choice for the presidential speech luncheon venue? That's quite a coincidence. Back to planning the president's luncheon. When Jerry Bruno was told that the Statler Hilton was already booked for a Pepsi bottlers convention, the Dallas Trademart was suggested instead by Eric Johnson, one of the owners of Texas Instruments, and by Robert Cullum, the founder of Tom Thumb Food Stores. Johnson and Cullum were in a position to make recommendations because they were in charge of the Dallas Chamber of Commerce and the Dallas Citizens Council, respectively. When White House advance man Bruno visited the Trademart, he had safety concerns about it because of the catwalks that would be above the president. He was especially worried about the president's safety in Dallas in light of the Adlai Stevenson incident. With the safety concerns about the Trademart, Bruno looked for other locations. But when he found out that Governor Connally was unhappy with the decision to not use the Trademart, Bruno decided to reconsider it out of deference to the governor. The location of the luncheon was not confirmed when Bruno returned to Washington from Dallas. On November 4th, the Secret Service got involved in the Dallas advance work for the first time. On that day, the top man at the Secret Service responsible for the White House security detail, Gerald Bain, contacted Agent Forrest Sorrells, the agent in charge of the Dallas Secret Service office. Bain told Sorrells that there were two options for the luncheon site: the Trademart, which would require extra manpower to secure due to the catwalks and numerous entrances and exits, and the women's building at the fairgrounds. On the same day, November 4th, local agent Sorrells went to visit these two potential locations. Sorrells told the Warren Commission that the Trademart would require more security than the women's building, and that the women's building, quote, wasn't a very nice place to take the president because the ceilings were too low and the air conditioning was exposed, although the security situation at the women's building was good. On the other hand, in Sorrells' November 30th, 1963 report, he said that Agent Gerald Bain, again the head of the White House security detail, told him that, quote, the Trademart had been suggested for the luncheon place, but that it was apparently not as good as the women's building. This written statement from Bain, which Sorrells did not mention to the commission, somewhat undercuts Sorrells' testimony about the women's building not being a nice place. In that same report, Sorrells said that after he visited the Trademart and the women's building on November 4th, he, quote, returned to the office and telephoned special agent in charge Bain and informed him that the Trademart did pose security problems and the women's building offered no problems as to security. Indeed, the Trademart had four internal balconies and 58 doors to protect, according to what Governor Connally told the Dallas Times-Herald. The same day that Sorrells visited the Trademart and the women's building, November 4th, Agent Winston Lawson was assigned as the lead advance agent for Dallas. On November 5th, Special Agent in Charge Bain told political advance man Jerry Bruno that Bain preferred the women's building as the luncheon site. Bruno had the impression that this decision to use the women's building was final when he heard it from Bain. Agent Winston Lawson made his first visit to Dallas as the Secret Service advance lead on November 13th. On that day, Lawson, Dallas Agent Sorrels, and Jack Puterbaugh from the Democratic National Committee, among others, visited both the Trade Mart and the Women's Building. As of the next day, November 14th, a final decision still had not been made about the luncheon venue. We know this because Dallas Police Captain M.W. Stevenson put it in his written report of November 30th, 1963. On November 15th, a story ran in the Dallas Times-Herald that said that the Trade Mart had been selected for the luncheon. The article said, quote, "Word of the selection came from Washington to Dallas sponsors of the event." This seems to imply that the decision was made from Washington, but it's possible that the choice was made in Dallas and it was just leaked from Washington. Later on the 15th, the Secret Service scheduled a meeting with the Dallas police at the Trade Mart for November 19th, but there was no visit scheduled to the women's building with the police and the Secret Service together. So it looks like the decision to use the Trade Mart had, in fact, been made by November 15th, when only the Trade Mart security follow-up meeting was scheduled and the women's building was not. The big question that remains is who exactly made the decision to use the Trade Mart over the women's building? The answer to that question is all over the place, and it depends on who you ask. Some say it was White House aide Kenny O'Donnell. The chief of Secret Service, James Rowley, told the Warren Commission that O'Donnell chose the Trade Mart site. Rowley added that Jack Puterbaugh told Advance Agent Winston Lawson about the Trade Mart decision, but Puterbaugh denied ever having that conversation with Lawson. According to the HSCA, the decision to use the Trade Mart was made by the White House through O'Donnell and Jerry Bruno because Governor Connally insisted on it. Governor Connally also said that Kenny O'Donnell chose the Trade Mart. Special Agent in Charge Gerald Bain also told the HSCA that O'Donnell told him that the Trade Mart was the final choice, and he told him that sometime between November 5th and November 9th. However, as we just discussed, there were meetings held between November 13th and November 15th where Secret Service and police in Dallas still did not know where the luncheon was going to be held. So if the decision was made earlier, it wasn't relayed to Dallas at that time. On the other side of the coin, Jerry Bruno, the White House advance man, undercuts what Rowley, Connally, and Bain said. Bruno told HSCA investigators that Agent Bain, Kenny O'Donnell, and Bruno all favored the women's building. If O'Donnell thought the women's building was the better choice, then it's not very likely that he would have selected the Trade Mart. But the HSCA didn't get a chance to ask O'Donnell because he died in September of 1977 from complications related to alcohol. Advance Agent Winston Lawson claimed that in addition to Jack Puterbaugh supporting the Trade Mart, it was Jerry Bruno's decision to use the Trade Mart, which, as we have seen, Bruno expressly denied. According to him, local Secret Service agents in Dallas, which probably means Forrest Sorrels, recommended the trademark, even though the top-ranking agent over the White House detail, Gerald Bain, wanted the women's building. The HSCA noted, quote, "If any local agent did, in fact, make such recommendations despite Bain's prior decision on November 6th favoring the women's building, this would have presented a clear case of a subordinate agent contradicting the special agent in charge of the White House detail." So the witness statements seem to indicate that either Kenny O'Donnell or Jerry Bruno were the ones who made the decision. But remember, neither O'Donnell nor Bruno were part of the Secret Service. They were just political guys. Advance Agent Lawson said that the trademark decision was made by someone in Washington after Lawson reported back to Agent Bain about both sites. Lawson said that he provided the information to either Roy Kellerman or Floyd Boring, who both reported to Bain. Kellerman was not involved in the Dallas advance planning until November 8th and did not receive his assignment to be in Dallas until November 17th. However, Floyd Boring, who was the number two man in charge of the advance planning at the Secret Service under Bain, was involved in the Dallas advance planning. Most likely, Agent Lawson spoke to Floyd Boring.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
So we have disputed testimony about who made the final call for the luncheon site, which at least partially dictated the route of the motorcade. But what do we know about the planning for the motorcade route itself? On November 14th, a week and a day before the assassination, there was a meeting between local Secret Service agent Forrest Sorrells, advance agent Winston Lawson, Dallas Police Chief Jesse Curry, and Assistant Chief Charles Batchelor. At that time, the police were told that neither the motorcade route nor the luncheon destination was final. Yet, the tentative route that was communicated to the police by the Secret Service on November 14th was the exact same route as the one ultimately used on November 22nd, but with one major difference. The last street Agent Lawson mentioned to the police in the November 14th meeting was Main Street. There was no reference to the sharp turn from Main to Houston to Elm. This dogleg left turn required the motorcade to materially slow down, which certainly would have made it an easier target. The turn was at a 120-degree angle, which was against Secret Service protocol. It was this turn that took the president right next to the school book depository building and the grassy knoll instead of through the center of Dealey Plaza down Main Street. To be clear, the easiest way to get on the Stemmons Freeway to get to the Trade Mart was to go down Elm Street. That's because there was a concrete divider in the road that made it very difficult to get on the freeway from Main Street. Even still, Dallas Police Sergeant Samuel Bella told author Vince Palomara in a letter that the night before the assassination, the planned route was to drive through the center of Dealey Plaza on Main Street and then stop traffic to cross over the barrier. Sergeant Bella said, quote, "My captain, P.W. Lawrence, came by my house in Dallas. It was getting late in the evening on November 21st. He wanted me to go with him to the Triple Underpass and show me the new route for the escort. The new route was Main Street, cross Houston Street at the Triple Underpass, go forward under the railroad, turn right, cross Elm Street to the entrance to the expressway, and stop traffic at that location for the president's escort. As you know, this route was changed from Main Street to Houston Street, right on Houston Street, to Elm Street, then left on Elm to the service road that approaches the freeway. There was never an answer as to why the sudden change. Another very similar route was available that would not have required driving over a concrete divider. The motorcade could have continued down Main Street through the middle of Dealey Plaza and then turned right on Industrial Boulevard, now known as Riverside Drive. This route was even discussed, but it was ultimately ruled against because, according to Assistant Police Chief George Lumpkin, it was, quote, "filled with winos and broken pavement," and because the president wanted exposure to crowds, which would not have been on Industrial Boulevard. But this idea that the surrounding area didn't look nice enough doesn't seem to be a credible reason for not taking Industrial Boulevard. That's because Agent Paul Landis noted that much of the ride from Love Field was, quote, "car lots, junk dealers, and auto parts stores." The Warren Commission says that the motorcade route itself was selected by Advance Agent Lawson. But local agent Sorrells told the commission that Lawson asked him for advice about the best route from Love Field to the Trade Mart. Sorrells said, quote, "Lawson and I drove what I thought would be the best route and the most direct route to the Trade Mart, bearing in mind that there would be a parade through the downtown section. So we drove that route, and then later we had the police go with us, and we went over the same route." Agent Lawson did confirm that he and Agent Sorrells drove over the final route with two police officers, but he denied to the HSCA that he drove over the route earlier with Agent Sorrells on November 14th. Lawson told the HSCA that he could not identify the person who approved the turn from Main to Houston to Elm. Contrary to the Warren Commission, the HSCA found that Advance Agent Lawson did not have control over the final determination of the motorcade route. Police Chief Curry told the commission that no one ever asked him about the route. Curry learned about the path the motorcade would take the day before the president's visit from Agents Lawson and Sorrells. Special Agent in Charge Gerald Bain told author Vince Palomara, quote, "I know the motorcade route was changed, but why? I've forgotten completely. I don't know." Dallas Police Captain Orville Jones said that the decision for the final motorcade route was made just a few hours before the assassination. Motorcycle officer Bobby Joe Dale said that there were three possible motorcade routes that had been discussed and that the police did not know which route had been selected until it came over the radio as they were leaving Love Field. Despite this testimony that the route had been changed, it's true that the motorcade plans were published in the Dallas Morning News and the Dallas Times Herald on Tuesday, November 19th. President Kennedy's aide, Kenny O'Donnell, refused to give the press the motorcade route based on concerns he had about security in Dallas after the Adlai Stevenson incident. Despite O'Donnell's concerns, the motorcade route was provided to the press after all by Betsy Harris, who worked for Bill Moyers, an aide to Vice President Johnson. Moyers told the HSCA that he wanted the route to be published in advance so that the president would be seen by the crowds. He claimed to have permission from a Secret Service agent to publish this information, but Moyers couldn't remember the name of the agent. At that time, it was not the practice of the Secret Service to publish the motorcade routes of presidents in advance. The Warren Commission found no issue with the final motorcade route. Agent Sorrells told the commission that the route taken by President Kennedy was the same one that was taken by President Franklin Roosevelt when he came to Dallas. But that's not exactly true. Roosevelt did go through Dealey Plaza, but his route went through the center of the plaza down Main Street instead of making the series of turns that resulted in the motorcade being on Elm Street between the School Book Depository building and the grassy knoll. In addition to the confusion about exactly who approved the 120-degree turn from Houston to Elm Street, there were several notable changes in the order of vehicles and passengers in the motorcade as compared to previous ones. First, the vice president did not normally travel in the same motorcade as the president for obvious reasons. The whole purpose of the office is to succeed the president if he died. But in Dallas, Vice President Johnson was present in the motorcade. This was the only time President Kennedy and Vice President Johnson were in the same motorcade. Second, Admiral George Berkeley, President Kennedy's personal physician, typically was a passenger in either the presidential limo or the Secret Service follow-up car. The only motorcades where Berkeley was somewhere else were in Rome and in Dallas. For the Dallas motorcade, Berkeley was placed in a bus at the very end, nowhere near the president. This deviation from the standard protocol in Dallas stands out even more because Berkeley was in the follow-up car in the Fort Worth motorcade just hours earlier. The third anomaly with the motorcade lineup involved General Godfrey McHugh, President Kennedy's loyal military aide. Typically, General McHugh rode between the driver of the presidential limo and the Secret Service agent in charge of the trip. But for the first time ever, in Dallas, he was asked to ride in a car at the back of the motorcade. According to a radio interview with General McHugh in 1978, he was told that the reason for moving him was, quote, "to give the president full exposure. They told me it would be helpful politically to the president." Fourth, as noted by the HSCA, there were several changes with the order of the motorcade on November 22nd as compared to the plan on November 19th. Each of the vehicles in the motorcade had a number taped to the outside of the windshield. For example, the presidential limo had number 7, but it was set up in the fifth position in the motorcade. The congressional cars were labeled as numbers 2 and 3, but they were instead put in positions 16 and 18. Mayor Earl Cabell, whose brother was Charles Cabell, the number 2 man at the CIA who was fired by President Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs, was also in the motorcade. Mayor Cabell's car was supposed to be number 1 according to the number on the windshield, but instead it was in 5th place. The 5th unique difference with the Dallas motorcade was that White House photographer Cecil Stoughton typically rode in the Secret Service follow-up car. Stoughton rode in that position in all motorcades from July of 1963 until the day before the assassination. On November 22nd, Stoughton was replaced in the follow-up car by Kennedy aide Dave Powers. And finally, the 6th deviation from the standard motorcade procedure in Dallas was the elimination of the flatbed press truck. As noted by Secret Service agent Clint Hill in his book, it was typical for the lead vehicle in the motorcade to be a press truck, an open flatbed with rails around the outside. Normally, this truck would be filled with about a dozen photographers, especially when large crowds were expected along the route. But in Dallas, the press truck was called off at the last minute, according to reporter Tom Dillard of the Dallas Morning News. Dillard told the Warren Commission, quote, "We lost our position at the airport. I understood we were to have been quite a bit closer. We were assigned as the prime photographic car, which, as you probably know, normally a truck precedes the president on motorcades, and certain representatives of the photographic press ride with the truck. In this case, as you know, we didn't have any." White House photographer Stoughton told C-SPAN in 1993 that the press flatbed truck was, quote, "canceled at the last minute, and the photographers were put in Chevy convertibles," which Stoughton said, quote, "totally put us out of the picture." The press truck had been used for local photographers in Florida just a few days earlier for the motorcade through downtown Tampa. Instead of having a press truck in front of the presidential limousine and having Cecil Stoughton, the official White House photographer, either in front of the limo or in the follow-up car behind it, all of the press and Stoughton were moved to positions further back in the motorcade, which were out of sight of the president's limo. So we have at least 6 independent anomalies that have to do with the order and the participants in the motorcade. Whether these deviations were innocent or sinister, someone had to be responsible for making those changes. So what does the record say about who changed the motorcade order? The Secret Service agent responsible for advance planning, Winston Lawson, told the Assassination Records Review Board in 1992 that he was the one who was responsible for handling the car numbers at Love Field. Lawson told the Warren Commission the same thing. However, Lawson told the HSCA that Jack Puterbaugh, the advance man from the Democratic National Committee, was, quote, "also in charge of the protocol of the motorcade and the arranging of seating and vehicle sequence for congressmen and other dignitaries." Puterbaugh, however, did not mention having any such responsibilities when he spoke to researcher Larry Happenin in 1970. Agent Roger Warner also confirmed Lawson's role in being responsible for the order of the motorcade. Warner's written report to the Warren Commission says that he assisted Special Agent Lawson, quote, "in lining up cars for the motorcade, passing out numbers for the automobiles, and other general duties." Regarding the question of why the press cars were moved, Lawson told the HSCA that he was, quote, not sure whether the deployment of the wire service car and press cars was done by the local press man in charge of press cars or by him. We don't know why Agent Lawson moved these vehicles, but the HSCA did confirm in their interview with him that, quote, the intended sequence of vehicles on November 19th was changed for November 22nd. Next time on Solving JFK, we continue to look at the Secret Service's role in the assassination of President Kennedy. Did they follow the same security protocols that they did in other cities when it came to the speed of the limo and rooftop protection? And why were agents removed from the back of the presidential limo at Love Field? If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.